Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz, episode 109 for February 18th, 2010. Symbian. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers free Libra and open source software with our host, Randall Schwartz of Stonehenge.com, at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N on Twitter, the Pearl Guru, the Squeak Apostle, the small talker.
With a big microphone.
With a massive Yeti microphone. Hey, Randall Schwartz.
Good to see you again, Leo. Hey, that's great. I love all the... You keep coming up with different labels for me, and it's different every time, so I appreciate that. Because I do wear many hats, except right now I'm not wearing a hat. But I am wearing a hat. It's the Floss Weekly hat, which is my favorite one of the week, at least on Wednesday afternoons. I love it. I have such a great audience because they notified me that between last week and this week, apparently, a new release of this open source software called GPotter just came out. And if you go to the, apparently you can tell GPotter to go ahead and publish the podcast that you're listening to. And there's this place called, it's my.gpotter.org/top list. And it shows the number one show that's listened to by people using GPotter. And we're number one.
Wow, we're number one.
Floss Weekly is number one on that list. And I was just thrilled to see that. Somebody tweeted that last week. And I went, oh, my God, that's great. So we beat Linux Outlaws just by a few. So actually, by the time you listen to the show, maybe the Linux Outlaws guys got them to subscribe to more. But I think we'll probably come up.
Now, word of warning, the URL that they use, they've for some reason dereferenced our redirect from leo.am/podcast/floss to the direct XML file. That is going to break very soon.
Oh, good.
So we're going to go from number one to nothing.
Number zero.
Yeah. We're moving. It's probably something I should probably say in all the podcasts. You shouldn't have to change anything. We're going to try to do this as transparently as possible. And I guess that actual direct link will also probably, we're going to use, what is it called? XEngine? I can't remember the name of it. We're going to use a program to redirect. But we're moving everything from leo.am to feeds.twit.tv. We want everything to be at twit.tv. Mm-hmm. So the new canonical URLs for the podcasts will change slightly. Probably feeds.twit.tv/floss, I would think. But pay attention to that. If suddenly you're using an aggregator that says, no more shows, we do a show every week. And if you don't see a show in your list, then check and see what the canonical URL is. The best way to do that is go to twit.tv/floss. Mm-hmm. There is a subscribe dropdown, and you can pick your client or even just get the direct RSS, and you'll see what the actual feed URL is. But I noticed this, and a lot of clients do this. They dereference the pointer to the actual file, but we prefer you don't do that because that's not guaranteed to work. The We can always guarantee that leo.am/podcast/floss will work, but not that the file direct will work.
Indeed.
Anyway, it's good to be on. It's good to be number one. And, I use GPotter on my MAMO, so there on my N900, at least I did. It's got it's got a funny little icon. I always like that icon.
Well, since I'm a Mac guy, I use iTunes, and it works just fine. And I'm sure my subscription will continue to work even after you start moving things around, because I'm sure iTunes will keep working. So I'll be happy about that.
Yeah, so we'll make sure. Promise.
Because if you somehow lose your subscription to Floss Weekly, you wouldn't hear people like the great guest I have today. The guest I have today is one of the key people involved with, you might have heard of this, Symbian. Have you heard of Symbian at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I remember a little bit about Symbian. Symbian is my favorite operating system in the whole wide world because it's based on the Scion operating system, which is the beloved Scion 3A, my most missed computer ever.
Oh, good. So you're familiar with today's topic because I'm not really much.
No, no. I've used many an S60 phone. I know a little bit about it. So
all I know is phones use it. That's about as much as I know. It's not on my phone.
Well, it was a British operating system. It was sold, I think, to Nokia early on. But what's interesting, and our guest will explain this, Sebastian will explain this, is that it is open. recently opened.
Very recently, like maybe like 2 weeks ago, I think. It's just within the last couple of weeks, they've taken this proprietary code base that's been used for a decade, I think, or more, and made it open source so that people can contribute to it and port it to new platforms and customize it and all sorts of things. I mean, it's really amazing when you think that how much work this had, they must have gone through for this. Well, it's to take something that's that old, that legacy, and to get all the dotted I's and crossed T's and stuff to take care of it. So our guest today is Sebastian Brandstrom, and I believe we're speaking to him from his hotel in Barcelona, if you pronounce it correctly. And I think he's actually at a convention where they're talking about this. So it'll be really all fresh in his mind about the open sourcing of Symbian and platform reliance and so on. So
we're going to call him just a second. I just want a clarification. Bear is in our chat room, our sysadmin. This is what he was talking. Well, I was trying to tell you, Nginx, which is a HTTP server and reverse proxy server, and that's what we're going to use for the redirects.
So, yeah, we actually brought that up a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about MongoDB had an Nginx plugin to be able to deliver files directly out of Mongo.
Right. Yeah. So, Bear, are we going to use this? Is this going to be our server instead of Apache, or are you just using it for the redirects? I'll have to find out. That's interesting.
It's probably just the layer ahead of Apache. It's not a server itself, I don't think so.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That makes sense. So it's a proxy.
Yep.
Got it. Well, Bear says, no, we are replacing Apache.
Wow.
Well, he just says yes. He could be saying yes to you. He could be saying yes to me. He could be saying yes to a cute girl in the chat room. I don't know.
He could be saying yes to a question asked 3 hours ago.
We have no idea.
He's the rain man.
Let's go to Barcelona, where the World Mobile Congress is going on right now. And it's late at night, so we better get him on very quickly. The guest of the hour, Sebastian Brandstrom of the Symbian organization. Sebastian, you're at a conference right now, yeah?
That's correct. I'm at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona in Spain.
Oh, not just any conference. This is the big one.
This is the big one. You have pretty much everybody from the mobile world convene at the same place. So that's why it's been so hard to get a working Wi-Fi here.
We should warn you that Sebastian is on 3G. Actually, he's on a Symbian phone with 3G and tethered. But
absolutely.
Considering you're in Barcelona and there's about 8,000 cell phone users right there, that's pretty good.
Yes, it is pretty good. I do believe that they have some kind of a special network set up just to cover the area, because I'm close to the convention center right now.
Yeah. So, of course, one of the big stories of the Mobile World Congress was Windows 7 Mobile. Is Symbian making any big announcements there?
Yeah, so we made a few announcements. Something that we announced just before the conference was that February 4th, we finally went entirely open source under the EPL license. And this is a process that we're going through for about a year's time now. It's taking quite a long time to open up this massive code base.
Now, explain the EPL, just for people who might not be familiar with it.
Yeah, so the EPL is the Eclipse public license created by the Eclipse Foundation for the Eclipse project, the IDE and toolkit that Eclipse is. And there was a long process where they decided to go for which license they decided to go, and EPL was the one they chose because it's reasonably liberal when it comes to productization and the proprietary code, which is important for the handset manufacturers.
Now, the way I understand it, just again so we can be on the same page with our audience, is that the difference between, say, the GPL and the EPL would be the GPL would be that if you add any more files to a distribution, those also have to go into the GPL. But with the EPL, any file that already is in the distribution, you have to remain open. But any files you add to it yourself can remain closed. So it's like the LGPL in that sense.
Yes, it is reasonably close to the LGPL from a copyleft perspective, yes. There are some other details to it. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really go into those, but that's quite similar to LGPL.
Well, so you're not a lawyer. So what is your role with Symbian and the Symbian Foundation?
So I work in the delivery team at Symbian. So we're trying to track and make sure that the development of the platform goes according to plan and that we actually get the contributions that our member companies have proposed and committed to delivering. And that means that we finally will get a platform that we can certify as a new release and deliver to our OEMs and to the open source community.
And Symbian's been around for quite a while. Can you describe how it got started and why you decided to go open source recently?
Yes, so Symbian has quite a long history. It's probably the oldest of all the smartphone systems out there. Mm-hmm. It came from the British company called Psion, which was reasonably big on handheld computers.
My Psion 3A was the greatest thing ever. And as a result, I've been watching Symbian really closely ever since. I just love the Psion platform.
Yeah, it's it came from Psion. And in 1998, some companies decided to spin that off from Psion. Maybe Psion decided it. That was way before my time. So basically, Nokia and Ericsson and Psion, I think, were the only three at the start of it. They decided to make a smartphone system out of it because it was a quite efficient PDA platform, and then they made a smartphone platform of it in 1998. And they renamed it Symbian.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much ever since, it's been developed as a smartphone platform.
So if I have an S60-based phone, that's Symbian.
Yes, that's correct. So S60 is Nokia's user interface on top of Symbian. So originally, Symbian didn't have its own user interface. It was merely a kernel and middleware stack. And today, what we call Symbian Platform is the old Symbian OS and middleware plus S60 on top of it, which is the complete platform. So that was the first thing that happened when in 2008, exactly to the day, 10 years after Symbian Limited, the old corporate Symbian was founded, Nokia bought out the other partners and decided to combine it into one platform and to contribute it as open source.
But despite the fact that Nokia bought it, that's why the Symbian Foundation exists, because other handset manufacturers still use it, right? So there has to be kind of an independent party that they're all part of.
Yes, exactly. So this is the point of it. So Symbian Foundation is very similar to Mozilla Foundation, Eclipse Foundation, Apache Foundation, and the Linux Foundation. So we are an independent non-profit organization based in London, in the UK, and our purpose is to govern the development of this platform for all of our OEMs. So today we have phones developed by Sony Ericsson, Samsung, and Nokia in Europe and the rest of the world. And in Japan, we also have NTT Docomo making phones mostly via Fujitsu and Sharp.
I think a lot of people, Randall, you might be one of them, when they hear of Symbian, think it's a proprietary operating system owned by Nokia.
Yeah, that's sort of what my initial impression was.
Right.
So it was sort of interesting hearing that Symbian has gone open source, trying to figure out how that all fits in the ecosystem.
Yes, absolutely. It probably came a bit out of the blue in 2008 when it was announced that Symbian was going to go open source. Obviously, a lot of things had changed in the industry in 2007 and 2008 with Android coming out and the iPhone sort of changing the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Nokia felt that they had to do something, and so they bought out the other members of Symbian and decided to make a new open source platform out of Symbian.
Yeah.
No, they use a landline. I love it. Yeah, the irony of this. The irony of talking about Symbian using a landline.
So as you've probably gathered, we are now on a phone with Sebastian. We lost the Skype connection via tethering. And you know, that happens every time I'm at any conference, CES, Macworld, South by Southwest, anywhere where there are heavy cell phone users or mobile phone users, you lose. You just, you know, you can't do it. So I'm glad we were able to call you back in your hotel room.
Yes, thanks for that.
Sure.
The plan wasn't really that I was going to be in Barcelona this week, so that's why we scheduled FOSS Weekly for today, but I was called in quite late to fill out an empty spot we had.
Well, it's a very big conference, and I think it makes perfect sense that you would be there. Mm-hmm. We were talking, while we were dialing you back, we were talking a little bit about the Psion and the 3A and the Psion 5, of course, before your time, I'm sure, Sebastian. But they were really great devices. They had a real operating system. Is the kernel of Symbian today basically the same as that Psion kernel?
I think the kernel in those platforms was the old EKA-1 kernel, and now we use EKA-2, which is a refined version of that, which has been around since 2004, 2005, something like that. But pretty much, I think the architecture is pretty much the same. It's a real-time microkernel, which is very lean and has some significant benefits when it comes to power management and also execution speed on these quite primitive devices that phones still are today.
Now, the early devices must not have had much in the way of memory or processor speed, right?
No, that's correct. And still today, many Symbian devices are quite underpowered compared to many of our competitors, and that's one of the benefits we actually see to the platform. And that's a reason why I think we can, in the future, in the near future, we're going to see quite staggeringly cheap Symbian devices compared to the other operating systems out there.
That's really important because the smartphones like the iPhone, the Palm Pre, the BlackBerry, I mean, these newer Android smartphones, they have 600 to gigahertz processors. They have a lot of RAM. Then they're, as a result, hundreds and hundreds of dollars, which leaves out much of the world. Much of the world cannot afford an expensive phone. So there's a huge market. It's why Nokia still sells more handsets than everybody else combined.
Yes, absolutely. So we are seeing the emerging markets for smartphones now opening up in India and in China. And I think it's quite important that we can get smartphones out there for significantly less than $100 per device. And that's, of course, without operator subsidy. Because, a smartphone user in India can't really carry a $50 or $75 or $100 phone bill every month to pay back a subsidy like that.
So Symbian went through a long period of being proprietary, owned by Symbian Limited, I guess it was, and producing results that was then OEM for all these other manufacturers. At what point did it become pressure to open source it? Was that brought about by Android then and other things like that?
So that was before my time. I joined the Symbian Foundation when it was already set up as a non-profit open source foundation. But what I've heard is that actually they had been discussing it for several years before Android came out in the market. Mm-hmm. But certainly I think the emergence of Android sort of improved the speed of the process and made this happen in a sense that probably it probably would have happened in a different way if Android wouldn't have existed.
So what is the benefit of having something like this open source? Obviously, it's the traditional things of like you can port it to the hardware that nobody imagines yet, or with trial hardware, things like that. But how do the original proprietary holders get benefit by open sourcing something like Symbian?
Yeah, so obviously sharing the development cost is one of the primary drivers behind this. Mm-hmm. Also, by being it open source and also license free, it saves the handset manufacturers quite a lot of money just from licensing.
Mm-hmm. Of course, they pay no license at all for it?
No, it's just like with Android. There is no license fee involved in shipping a Symbian device.
That's fantastic. Wow.
Yes, absolutely. I think today it's actually, Windows Mobile is still the only system left that is actually that actually does have a license fee per device.
So what was the incentive for Nokia to give that up? I mean, aren't they giving their competition a free operating system? Or is it the idea that they want to grow the ecosystem?
I think they absolutely do want to grow the ecosystem, and the ecosystem is certainly growing. We are seeing more handset manufacturers coming up to us. We've seen today here at Mobile World Congress, there are companies in Asia primarily coming up to us and wanting our help to help them bring a Symbian phone to market. And also, of course, having the whole thing open source, as you say, makes it much easier to provide a baseboard, as we call it, of Symbian to new hardware, so that the silicon vendors out there can come to OEMs that produce the handsets with a working Symbian port, basically, that they have been able to do themselves without much help from anybody else.
How different is the different kinds of hardware that Symbian runs on? I would imagine that at the next level down, the chipsets of handheld devices like phones has to be pretty similar for interfaces, or else everybody else would go crazy, right?
Yeah, so basically the whole mobile scene is built around ARM chips today. Mm-hmm. In various families, going back to the ARM9, basically, which is the N95 era kind of hardware, which is still quite prevalent in Asia and also in Europe and the Americas on cheaper phones. ARM 11 is the hardware you see on a lot of the Symbian smartphones today. And then, of course, moving on to the ARM Cortex A8 and A9, which is what the iPhone 3G runs, and also Symbian phones like the Omni HD from Samsung. Mm-hmm. These are the really high power devices. So we're really trying to provide good scalability of Symbian, both upwards and downwards. And especially downwards is something we're driving within the foundation, whereas I think our OEMs are quite interested in driving it upwards right now to sort of eke out the stronger margins on their phones, as you can sell a high-power phone for a lot more money than a low-power phone today.
So just hypothetically, given that the iPhone, which I'm familiar with, is an ARM processor, how hard would it be to port Symbian to the iPhone? Hold your mind's just collapsed out there. But let me. I'm just testing this theoretically. So is there like a lot of things to write? You have to write. Is it all new hardware at the lowest level, or is there stuff mostly similar at that level?
So I mean, at the hardware level, I think most phones today are very similar. Okay. But then, of course, Symbian is a completely proprietary system from a driver's perspective. We have a very different driver model. So Symbian is, as far as I know today, one of the very few operating systems written entirely in C++ and not C, as most systems are.
Okay.
And that's probably a...
That's probably a horrible thing. No, I'm sorry. It's just my biases.
Yeah, so...
What a mess. My biases leak through there.
I honestly think that if Symbian was written from scratch today, that C++ may not have been the choice. But since Symbian was created around 2000 around 95 or somewhere around there. C++ was the big thing. And in many ways, I think it does provide a level of abstraction that you won't get with C++, and just organizing this massive, massive source code tree that Symbian is. Today, mm-hmm. we're at around 32 million lines of code, as far as I know. It is easier with an object-oriented language than just with a procedural language like C. Mm-hmm. However, I mean, we have... The only other example of a C++ operating system I know of is BOS, mm-hmm. which of course didn't go anywhere really. Did it from B.
Now C++, if I recall back in '95, actually the was sort of best of breed when you started building something that was 100,000 lines or more. Typically, C++ was the go-to language for that. One of the things I do remember, though, is that there was two or three incompatible C++s that were out there. Is this targeted with GCC to build with?
Yeah, so that brings us to one of the points of Symbian, that we actually have a bit of our own breed of C++ called Symbian C++, naturally enough. Yes, which is based around some unique paradigms. So, for instance, Symbian C++ does not, at least to the developer today, does not make use of exceptions. Instead, you have a primitive form of exception called a leave, which instead of returning an object, returns an integer with an error. And this was actually created to save the stacking for the process from expanding so much as it does when you leave from a deep nest of inherited classes in C++, for instance. Mm-hmm. I mean, however, today this has been re-implemented in as exceptions in Symbian. Mm-hmm. So this is just a legacy thing that we have. And we have other sort of peculiarities to the platform. String handling is a bit different from string handling as it's done today in C++, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there are some quirkinesses in the C++ that is made to, in which Symbian is made.
How is this developed? I mean, how are there must be phone simulators then, or hard platform simulators that you run the code in order to test it out? Or do you have phones that have, like, you know, special leads out that you can single step and trace with? I'm just curious, because I don't develop for this kind of platform, so if you could help me understand how it works.
Yeah, so that probably depends on who you're asking. So if you go to the OEMs, they certainly have their own phones with leads sticking out to them. Mm-hmm. We don't have access to those phones at the Symbian Foundation, and so therefore we make use of an emulated environment in QEMU that mm-hmm. we're working on right now. We have a port of Symbian called Cyborg with an S, which is basically a Symbian running inside QEMU. And that's still a bit of a work in progress, and we're certainly looking for help there from our community to improve this and make this a complete working and an efficient emulating solution for Symbian.
No, that does.
So we also have.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, we also have various kinds of reference hardware. Something we're working quite heavily on right now is the BeagleBoard, which mm-hmm. is sort of an open source, quite open platform from Texas Instruments that you can get from beagleboard.org. It's a really cheap $150 Texas Instruments platform that you can use to develop and run. I mean, you can run Linux on it, you can run Android on it, you can run Symbian on it, and and that's a very good way to get started building your own device on Symbian.
Now, how much of what has just been open sourced is going to end up in a particular phone? I mean, is there a lot of like little various pieces that wouldn't be? I mean, is there like separable modules that so Symbian isn't monolithic? There's actually pieces to it. I don't know how to get this question out. Something like that.
Yeah. So Symbian is obviously a huge project today. It consists of over 140 separate different software packages. Okay. And each of those packages is probably the size of your average large open source project. So as I said, in total, it's over 30 million lines of source code in the whole thing. So it's a massive piece of source code that we managed today.
How many of those 30 million lines of code is headers saying this is the copyright for this file?
Well, so every single file has EPL header, of course. So that's about it. And so you were asking about how much actually ends up in a phone. So there are a large part of the process of going open source was actually cleaning up all the third-party IP that was in there. There's so much source code that has been licensed over the years from various parties in the industry, from silicon vendors and from third-party software houses and from service providers and so. And removing all that software and replacing it with either scrapping it entirely if it wasn't relevant anymore or replacing it with something open source or at least freely licensed has been a large part of this process. So I think there is where you're going to see differences between what we provide from the Symbian Foundation, which is the open source Symbian platform, and what actually ends up in a phone. And that can be typically things like OpenGL, for instance, which we have a reference implementation for, but that any handset manufacturer would probably try to license an optimized version for.
Yeah, so like if there's a particular calendar manager or some application that ran on Symbian that you couldn't, that was locked into some vendor, then you'd have to replace it with some open source version of that.
Yeah, so there were quite a few of these instances. I think there were over 100 of quite severe cases which was found during some kind of audit, and that was also before I came to Symbian. But when I came to Symbian in September of last year, there was at least 100 of these quite severe issues left, and we have been working very hard. Many people have been working hard for about 6 months trying to clean those up, and now finally we could go open source in February because they had virtually all been closed, or we had found a resolution for all of them.
Yeah, I'm really familiar with this process. We're doing the same thing with Squeak right now, trying to get it all under the MIT license, and finding contributions from 140 different contributors over the years is a little tricky. Jeez. Trying to figure out what pieces where. So I'm totally sympathetic to what you guys had to go through to get this done. So I appreciate the work that went into it. So of these, you said 100 little packages, or some of those are obviously like end user applications, or some icon that would show up that select something, but a lot of it is the infrastructure, right? The stuff that actually makes the phone work or manages the data files or whatever, that sort of thing, right?
Yes, absolutely. So the kernel and the middleware is probably at least half of those source code lines, and then you have the graphics on top of that, and the APIs for developers and the applications, as you say, that sit on top of everything, including PIM apps, web browser, notes, and Dialer and all these things that the end user sees.
Now, is this release complete as it comes out of the box? Could I compile it and put it on my compliant phone and run a completely open source version of this now? Or are there still pieces missing that would keep it from running on a particular existing commercial Symbian implementation?
Yeah, so what is missing is typically drivers, of course. Most hardware for various phones is quite proprietary to that specific phone model, so it would be actually quite difficult to run it on that phone. And today we sadly don't really have any phones that have open bootloaders. The OEMs tend to like to lock their phones down, so you can't really modify them. Mm-hmm. We are working on that, and we're absolutely trying to encourage our OEMs to provide open phones that we can give out to developers and that developers can buy and flash their own Symbian to them.
Well, obviously that's a conflict with their goal. I mean, they're trying to sell phones that they can lock down with their own demands and requirements, so I can see what you're up against. It's similar to the people opening the Wi-Fi specifications open for Wi-Fi chips. Same issues there. So if there's nothing that this will run on yet, except inside a simulator,
the BeagleBoard. Don't forget the BeagleBoard. That's okay. Quite an important step.
If it's limited to that, how do you get more developers contributing to this project other than the people that have just been contributing to it so far?
Yes, I mean that's what we're actually starting to try to do now. Once we are open source, so previously It was in the last year, it hasn't even been possible to contribute to it, and We're just starting out now with various initiatives to allow people to and encourage people to contribute to the platform. And the first thing, as I said, is the BeagleBoard, which is something we've been working heavily on in the last few months to make this possible. We have a lab inside the foundation where we're working on building our own phone based on the BeagleBoard and based on an off-the-shelf modem and a normal computer monitor, etc. And we are working to provide complete instructions for how to build your own device running Symbian.
It's probably not going to fit in your pocket, though.
No, that's the thing, of course, that this is going to be, you know, backpack-sized, and you're going to need a car battery to power it, but...
Like back when everyone was carrying those big ghetto blasters, right? This is going to be a huge phone.
Something like that. and the other part of it is obviously, as I said, to try to encourage our OEMs to provide open handsets that we can that people can flash their own firmwares to. And I'm sure that's going to happen. It's just a part of a matter of time.
Yeah, I'm just wondering though. I mean, I imagine the jailbreakers for the iPhone could probably get a hole in that you could probably squirt Symbian somewhere in the middle of. That'd be sort of interesting as a
Absolutely. And obviously at the foundation, we certainly don't have anything against that. Maybe the handset manufacturers would.
They might. Just a little bit.
Yeah, they might.
Just a little bit. But, you know, I bet it would work
against the profit motive there. So
yeah, but I bet it would work pretty well. They put Linux on an iPhone, so I'm sure you could do it.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure why you'd want to do it, but I'm sure you could do it.
So you don't have a lot of outside contributors yet. I mean, this basically... You really haven't had a project until a couple of weeks ago.
That's actually the case, and that's why I think it's a very good thing to be able to come on this podcast now and try to drum up interest in coming and helping out with this platform, because I really think we do have quite a unique offering here, and that we had the market share. We're by far the largest mobile phone operating system on the planet, at least for smartphones.
This is exciting times for this, because this could really springboard into some huge, I mean, presuming you can finally get some hardware this will run on, this would be a really interesting project.
Yes, absolutely. And we have some quite unique technology in there. I mean, it's not only the most popular smartphone system, I think we're also the most complete smartphone system. We're the most power efficient. We are the most battery conserving. We have the most features. We support pretty much every single telecommunication standard that's ever been out there. And as I said, I mean, we've been around for 10 years now, mostly as a proprietary system, of course, but the technology is still in there, and there's a lot to play with.
Mm. So the hot topic these days in phones is support for apps. Let's talk about apps running on top of Symbian. What kind of services do you offer app developers?
We have a large number of applications written over the years, of course, and... writing apps for Symbian has historically been quite cumbersome because of the quirkinesses that I mentioned in the Symbian C++ APIs and the Symbian C++ language. We obviously do have a large set of good apps right now. I mean, we do have Skype for Symbian. It was announced actually yesterday or two days ago by Skype here at Mobile World Congress, which runs fine over 3G and integrates beautifully with the telephony application in the phone. We also, of course, have Spotify, the big music service here in Europe. We have Opera. We have an Evernote application. Facebook, MySpace, all these companies have their own apps, of course. Layar, the augmented reality company are coming out with an app soon for Symbian.
Yeah, that's a great browser for Android. Is it easy to port Android over to Symbian?
Well, I've actually never written an Android application, so...
And this strictly isn't your bailiwick. I mean, Symbian Foundation doesn't really do any development anyway, so...
No, so we don't really write anything for the platform. We do integration, we do testing, and coordination across the platform. But the other thing that's coming now is the Qt framework. So what happened was that two or so years ago, Nokia bought Qt, the Norwegian software company, or actually Trolltech, as it was called back then, for their Qt technology, which is what powers KDE, for instance, mm-hmm. on Linux, which is quite fantastic C++ library, which goes all the way also from middleware basically up to UI widgets and nice transitions, and they even have their own UI definition language, QML, now. And it's beautifully cross-platform, even though it's C++, which is a bit of a feat, actually. And Qt now runs beautifully on Symbian. So Symbian 3, which is the next release we're releasing, we announced it at Mobile World Congress now, and it's going to be feature complete in a few weeks. Mm. It comes out of the box with Qt support. So app developers writing new apps today should certainly write them in Qt instead of Symbian C++.
So how does someone get involved and using what tools with Symbian development then? Is it, do you have like a public code repository? Is it Git, I hope?
Yes. No, it's not Git. It's Mercurial.
That's close enough.
HG.
Yeah. And is it, so is all the code published now? Are we at that point in this cycle?
Yes, all the code is published on our developer site. We have a pretty massive developer site at developer.symbian.org, mm-hmm. where you find not only, of course, the operating system itself, but also all the documentation and SDKs for application development on top of Symbian, mm-hmm. And a forum and SDK documentation and a wiki, of course, and everything you need to get started with Symbian development, be it, you know, hacking on the platform itself, or be it developing for the platform.
So I actually could use the open source release with an emulator, or maybe the hardware platform you talked about earlier, to build end-user Symbian applications as well.
Absolutely, yes. There's a PDK, as we call it, the product development kit, which is the entire compiled platform, which mm-hmm. gives you access to everything, basically, and that's what you run in the emulator or on BeagleBoard hardware. And then, of course, we have normal SDKs that only provide the public APIs and enough to build an application that runs on top of on Symbian.
I'm not familiar with the Symbian. Is there the equivalent of a store that has to be, you have to send everything through in order to download it to your retail phone, or can anybody download anything they want to a Symbian phone?
So we don't really have a store. We do have a signing process, so Symbian applications need to be signed so we can identify the developer, basically. Mm-hmm. And this is something that the operators primarily are very interested in seeing, so that we can identify who made an app and so that we can block developers and even applications that have been found to be malicious. Mm-hmm. And this is a bit of a sort of sore point sometimes with some people, that you actually have to send your app for signing, which includes sort of random testing of certain applications, or rather an audit. And there's also a fee involved in this, and this has been changing quite a lot lately. We're trying to bring the fees down. We're trying to make it more open for everybody to develop applications, mm-hmm. and make it easier to have them published on your phone.
So, but can I just go to an arbitrary website on my real Symbian phone? I hate to say it that way, but, you know, my retail phone. And just download an app for my device then, right?
Yes, you can. And that's how apps have historically been deployed to Symbian phones. Now, of course, the handset manufacturers and also the operators have launched their own stores with Symbian applications in them. Mm-hmm. And we're running a program we call Symbian Horizon, which is sort of a publishing house for applications that you as a developer can make use of. You can submit your app to Symbian Horizon, and we will help you pass it on to all of these various stores out there.
Yeah, I was just going to ask then. So what I was trying to get at is there also a community maybe already around building open source apps that run on Symbian? And are you working with that community as well, or is that just an extension of your community?
Yeah, so there hasn't historically been a very large community around open source development on Symbian. But I think we are trying to encourage that right now, and we are seeing that to some extent. I've been involved in some projects around that in my history before I came to Symbian Foundation.
Well, that'll be really interesting then. I mean, if you can help empower the all the way from the lowest OS level all the way up to, you know, end user apps in an open source community, that sounds wonderful. That's a lot more open, I think, than obviously than the phone I'm carrying around right now. But yeah, that sounds great.
So openness is really sort of a badge of honor for us. So we're trying to be more open than Android. We're trying to be sort of one of the most open source projects out there. Uh-huh. Even though we're such a massive project, we've invested a lot of thinking into our governing process and how the platform is actually controlled and who controls it and how everybody can basically influence this the development of the platform.
Go ahead, sorry.
So Symbian is controlled by four councils that govern the development of the platform. And these are the Features and Roadmap Council, who obviously look into where we're going with the platform in sort of a longer-term perspective. We have the Architecture Council that decide how the actual implementation of these features is going to look for the next few versions coming ahead. There's a User Interface Council for UI stuff, things that actually affect the UI. And there is the Release Council, which is the one I report to in my role at Symbian. Mm-hmm. That decides when a release is finished and sort of tries to track and follow up on how the implementation of the next version is going. And these councils are seated by, I mean, all of the board members who actually fund the foundation have automatic seats there. And then there are a number of rotating seats that any member company of Symbian can take part in. And coming forward now is also going to be possible for enthusiastic and passionate individuals in the community to actually take a seat on these councils as well.
What do you think the relationship will be like going forward then with the code base that's public, with the possibility of public commits, and the code bases that are within each of the OEM organizations, which would have a tendency to diverge, I imagine, because they've got their own people fixing bugs and things like that. I mean, there's 100 different Linux distros out there. I don't know necessarily that all the patches go upstream. And I'm wondering if you're doing something now to make sure that the OEM versions don't diverge too radically.
It's a major concern, of course, because that's certainly what happened in the past, that the source code bases for Symbian that the OEMs were using were quite different from the mainline Symbian. And that was before it was open source, of course. So that's something we're working quite hard at, and sort of that's what the Symbian Foundation is here to try to solve. We are here to act as facilitators and mediators for the whole community, and we certainly want to provide a balance between these huge corporations that provide the phones and other contributors of the platform. And I think we have quite good understanding now with the OEMs and with the other large contributors that without the minor contributions we're going to see from individuals and from small companies, there isn't really much value in having the thing open source if you're not going to allow these things to actually make it to device and to make it into the code lines. Mm-hmm. So obviously staying close to the main code line that we maintain is important.
Yeah, I'm also thinking of things though, like, suppose you look at an API and decide, oh, this particular API sucks. It was developed in, 1998, and we've come a little ways since then in understanding how to make this API better. So we're going to have to deprecate this API. But then one of the phone companies says, no, wait, I use that in all my code, and I don't want it to go away. I'm sure there's going to be this sort of political tug of war around a technical issue at some time in the future.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so that's what the Architecture Council is there to do. So any major change that changes a public API of Symbian needs to go through the Architecture Council. Mm-hmm. And on this council, of course, you're going to have all of the OEMs because they are board members, and you're also going to have some other members. And hopefully they are going to be able to come to some kind of agreement of what to do with this API. But many of these things are still not tested. We have spent a lot of effort trying to make sure we have a sound system before we got started as a public open source project. But there's still a lot of work to be done, and I think we're going to have to try and see how the system as we have set it up actually works. I mean, we're very open to change. We're very aware that that we need to constantly reevaluate how these things work.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got probably a version numbering scheme for the open source releases. Do you think that will end up being reflected, in, at least in timing-wise, with the OEM's releases?
Yeah, so we did reset the numbering system when the Symbian Foundation was launched, because it was mm-hmm. used to be numbered Symbian 9 point something, and then S60 had its own versioning system, and it was a bit of a mess. So we reset the numbering system to Symbian 1, which was the closed source version we actually provided as the first offering from Symbian Foundation. And now, as I said, we just released Symbian 3, and Symbian 4 is coming up in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And then, of course, whether phone OEMs would use every single version, I don't think every phone manufacturer will use every version. I mean, just like you see on Android today, some are on 1.6, some are on 2.0, some are 2.1. You're certainly going to see devices made on each release, I'm quite sure, but not necessarily every single OEM is going to use every release.
That's the difficulty with handsets. The manufacturers assert so much control over what they put on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
There's no standard. There's no standard Android.
And also the lifetime of devices is so short, and they tend to be replaced so quickly. I mean, in 2 years, you're going to have a new handset. Pretty much everybody has a new handset after 2 years, and progress needs to occur. So sometimes you do need to have several different versions out there. But I mean, that's, as I said, we do have quite a strong compatibility promise for Symbian. So apps should work between releases. I mean, apps on Symbian 1 work fine on Symbian 3.
Wow. What about multitasking? This is one of the things that comes up in the Apple Android competition. Is that Apple refuses to allow multitasking for applications? Android lets anything go, and there are pros and cons to each. Every time I mention multitasking, and boy, do we hear from the Symbian community saying, "Hey, we've got that."
Yeah, so we had multitasking 10 years ago, and that's sort of one of the things that comes back to the architecture of Symbian, that it's written in a very asynchronous way, and that has major benefits for multitasking performance and also our kernel, which has very, very good power management and multitasking capabilities, is actually probably the leading platform from a multitasking standpoint on small devices. So we're absolutely very much pro multitasking, and I think we can do so and still maintain battery life reasonably well. I mean, of course, if you're going to play HD video, you're going to run out of battery at some point. But I mean, using Spotify, streaming music in the background to your headset or talking on Skype should typically be fine without ruining the battery life.
Well, this is really an exciting time to be involved in handheld devices. I mean, it just seems like every day, every month, something new is announced in this area. And I really... I look forward to seeing the things that Symbian gets to help generate and produce, and I'm just to really thank you for coming on the show, taking time out of your busy conference schedule. So it sounds like you're there right in the heart of talking about all this stuff. Thanks for taking time to come talk to us. Any last words for our audience?
Yeah, so we'd love to have developers come on board and help us out. We're running some major projects right now. We're trying to, for instance, compile the whole platform with GCC because it's been compiled with a proprietary ARM compiler. And mm-hmm. today, maybe 90-95% compiles fine with GCC, but we need some help cleaning out the rest of the things that don't strictly compile today. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of initiatives that we're launching right now from the Symbian developer site, as I say, developer.symbian.org, or you can just go to symbian.org, the main community site, and find your way there.
Mm-hmm.
We run a popular blog on blog.symbian.org. We tweet quite a lot from the Symbian account.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend people follow.
It's @Symbian.
@Symbian, of course, mm-hmm. Yes. And if you want, you can follow me at Technolog, TAKNOLOG. I tweet quite a bit about Symbian as well.
Cool. Yeah, I saw your tweets this morning when you said you're going to be on the show. So, yay, finally got your handle.
Cool. Yeah.
Is it Technolog? Techno? Say
yeah, TEKNOLOG.
KN. I got it.
Exactly, yes. With a K.
Yeah, let's get that right.
We'll follow the wrong Technolog now. There's no, TEK.
There it is. You're the one typing dum de dum de dum.
Yes, when I was waiting for you to come online. Yes, that may not have been the most insightful of my tweets.
No worse than most, let me tell you.
I've had a lot worse, I tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but we're pretty excited about the future. It really feels like it's the second coming of Symbian. We have probably some fantastic devices coming out from our OEMs. We have many more OEMs coming out, mostly out of Asia. We have a fantastic new SDK with Qt support. We're moving towards, in Symbian 4, we're going to have a completely new UI with all kinds of fancy animations and, you know, swooshing effects and sliding and, well, everything people expect from modern smartphone platforms.
Cool. Very cool. Well, thank you very, very much. And we'll let you get back to the conference and or whatever the party's going on tonight there. Always
parties. Yeah, it's almost midnight here, so... I think I'm going to head to bed because we have another day of standing in a booth tomorrow.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it, Sebastian.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and thanks for having Symbian on. We need all the help we can right now, and I'm sure we're going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Sebastian Bronstrom is the release manager for Symbian, symbian.org, the place to go. You can follow him at TEKNOLOG on Twitter. Follow Symbian at Symbian on Twitter, and... I would love to see if you ever get any handset manufacturer wants to duplicate the Scion 3A, just let me know. I'd buy that in a heartbeat. Best keyboard.
Well, I'm sure now that you've mentioned it on the podcast, somebody's going to come out
over and
do so.
There you go.
Thanks, Sebastian.
If I find an OEM walking the floor tomorrow, I'm going to tell them to make a Symbian phone like that.
I would tell everybody, this is the phone. All right. Hey, thanks, Sebastian.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm glad we could get him back on via telephone.
How much did that cost on Skype?
Oh, you don't even want to know. Actually, I don't know. Let's see. No, you know, it didn't cost much. What did I say I had in credit when I started? It cost less than $1.
Wow. That's not bad.
Yeah, maybe not even that much. Maybe
that is so amazing that you can call internationally now.
With great quality.
Exactly. It's just... insane. It's
what a world. What a world.
I know the technology of Skype that, you know, makes this show possible. I wish there was a good open source solution that works as well as this.
There will be. And I keep looking at things like Asterisk and things, but I would of course jump on open source. The problem is that of course it has to be something that everybody else also has. I can't make people download and install something.
No, there's just no way of getting around that, especially if it's something that doesn't run on Windows and they prefer Windows as their base platform or something, and that would just be crazy. That's the way it is. Wow, so this is an exciting time, as I said, for phone platforms and stuff. This is great. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, can I get Symbian on the iPad? You know, that's where I'm going with this, but I don't know. We'll see. It'll be just fine, whatever's on the iPad, I'm sure. I'm sure I'll buy one eventually, so there we go. Speaking of eventually, I am, as most people are listening to this, I am either just getting ready to go or I'm already at Scale, the Southern California Linux Expo, and speaking on Smalltalk. I'm doing an hour-long talk on Smalltalk, and I'm also I'm going to be representing the Linux Fund there. I'll be wearing my Linux Fund hat and T-shirt from time to time, talking to people about the way that we fund open-source projects, mostly by using Affinity credit cards, which seem to be working out well. We actually have a couple new programs from that. We just got approval for the, where's my notes? Darn it. I think it's the UK business card. I think that one's approved now. So if you're in the UK and you want to help fund open source projects, you can apply for a Visa card and just spend like you normally spend with it. And part of that goes to us that we can give away. So it's really cool. If you follow me on Twitter to find out when I'm actually speaking there, or if you want to hook up with me to... say hello, as long as I'm going to be in the Los Angeles area. That's Merlin, twitter.com/Merlin. And I have some upcoming guests. Let's talk about the upcoming guests, Leo. Great people still on the program here. Next week, we've got Jamie Cameron, who was the creator of probably the oldest manager system by the web system called WebMin. And from WebMin, you can go through... turn on your SSH service or start up Apache server or whatever. It's a very cool setup, and we were talking to Jamie about that. Bill Hoffman's on the week after that. He's the creator of CMake, which is a super-duper make program that's being used in a lot of big open-source applications now. We have Carlos Puchol from the Amahi group. Amahi is basically a home server network. So your all-in-one firewall, media server, management system, but all nice turnkey. So you just plug it in, or you know, use it. Get a off-the-shelf box and throw a Mahi on it, and everything works fine. And then Matt Ray, and I apologize. The last couple of weeks, I called Zenos a CMS. I am so sorry. At this time, I actually got email from their PR person.
What is
it? It's a monitoring system. So It's use it in places where you want to make sure that all your boxes are running and the ping times are right and the load average isn't out of whack and stuff. So it's a monitoring platform. Someday I'll actually do some research for these shows before they come up.
No, why should I? Why I don't? Why should anybody? No,
why should I go out of step on these?
It's the Larry King style.
Yeah, and just added to the schedule, I believe, between last week and this week, Doug Smith is going to come on to talk about the ACM IEEE Cluster Challenge, where they get cluster peanut bars. No. It's clusters of machines.
No, that's getting me hungry.
Running high speed, you know, networks. So we've had a lot of like the pieces of this on the show in the past, but this is, from what I understand, they actually try to see who's got the most teraflops or petaflops these days, right? By bringing the machines together and running benchmark applications and stuff. So we'll hear about it from him. I think the actual challenge is like next week or 2 weeks from now. So I think we're going to hear the results of this year's contest in this show coming up. So
Right. Lots
of other people on the list, twitch.tv/floss. There's a spreadsheet link there that has the upcoming guest list. If you want a project to move quickly up the list, have the project leader email me, and that puts them right to the top of the list.
No flunkies allowed.
Absolutely. It seems to be working there. I've just been accepted at Dragon Con for the 7th year. Dragon Con, it'll be fun. So anyway, lots of stuff going on. So I think I've covered everything we have to cover at the end of the show. Anything else, Leo? We're pretty much done.
I think we're all done. But thank everybody for being here, and remind everybody that we do this show at 1:30 Pacific time every Wednesday at live.twit.tv. That's 4:30 Eastern Standard Time. Mm-hmm. And let's see, 1330 plus, is it 8 or 9?
That's 8 in the winter.
2130 then.
Yep, indeed.
UTC.
You got the numbers.
I got it all right.
Make sure you, that was obnoxious. Make sure, I don't know, channel Jerry Lewis or something right there. I don't know what happened. Make sure you tune in. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.